Welcome to the NCO Journal Podcast. This is a podcast series where we discuss published articles with authors and provide a forum for the open exchange of ideas, information, and solutions. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, NCOIC of the NCO Journal. With us, Chaga Zapata, the managing editor of the NCO Journal. Today, we discuss the article, "The Solution to Recruiting and Retention is in the NCO Creed," by First Sergeant Robert Leonard. Before we kick things off, First Sergeant, could you please tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is First Sergeant Leonard. I go by Terry. I know this is Robert, but currently assigned to the 889th Quartermaster Company, the world-famous Mountain Badgers out in Great Falls, Montana. I'm in a 2PU status and have been in the Army Reserve since 2010. Prior service, Navy, before that with a bit of a break in service. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here.
And what did you do in the Navy, if I could ask?
Yeah, it's kind of a neat program that's not around anymore. I was an AW. There was a time in the Navy back in the 80s to date myself. I joined the Navy in 86. The AW rating, it was an aircrew rating. So if you passed enough tests and you did well enough in your what they would call our A school, which is your MOS school, you could go fly in certain aircraft. And I was fortunate enough to fly in jets in the Navy, flew in the S-3 Strike Viking. So 20-something years old, actually 19 years old when I got winged flying off of aircraft carriers in the back of a Navy jet. So it was a pretty exciting time to be alive.
All right, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was a pretty neat program.
So your article, you know, you're an NCO, you've been enlisted your whole career, you see some issues with the recruiting and retention in the Army, and you say that the solution is in the NCO Creed. What inspired you to write this article?
Yeah, so, I think all of us see the news about the recruiting retention numbers, and then personally, I've seen it. Prior to coming back to the 889th, I was at the 364th ESC working for General Warner and CSM Masters of the Enlisted Aide to the Command Group. And so I got a broad picture, and that was probably the neatest thing in my entire career at this point, was to see behind the curtain how the big Army works and looking at the ebb and flow of recruiting and retention numbers there. But the tie to the NCO Creed for me was, you know, being prior service Navy and then basically working for the government my entire adult life in some manner, I had never seen something like the NCO Creed until I went to, back in the day, it was a Warrior Leader course. And as I read it, you know, you stand up in class and everybody has to say it, you know, at WLC and ALC, SLC. And you can recite it because you have to, but if you take the time to read it, there's so much there. And then as I'm progressing, and when I was at the ESC, working with CSM Masters, Mike Masters, a great friend of mine, he's retired now. I saw all these great leaders, and I could almost pinpoint where in the NCO Creed their great leadership was coming from. And that was my inspiration to write it. You know, all of these great leaders that I've had, you know, I had a First Sergeant, Kendra Irby, great, great leader, and she embodied the NCO Creed too. So it was just kind of a no-brainer too. Hey, what are we doing wrong as leaders, and what are we doing right? So I kind of juxtapose those two things against the NCO Creed and using just kind of like my academic background to want to write things. I just sat down and started writing. So there you go.
I wanted to bring up something about your article before we really take a deep dive into it. And that is, well, you talk about at the beginning of the article in your intro, and then when you delve a little deeper there, you talk about some of the recruiting and retention issues, but I wanted to just bring this to everyone's attention. I know there was something that came up from TRADOC that they wanted us to make sure that it was understood that we weren't passing on misinformation or information. It's not that it was misinformation. It's just that it's information that's now outdated. So the recruiting and retention has changed since you submitted the article, which was in 2023. I believe you sent it to us in November. And we are, you know, the NCO Journal, we have a good number of articles that we've been going through, and we've, with the help of the Sergeant Major Academy contributing editors, we've been able to now start pushing them through and start publishing them more often and more and more timely in the publication process. But there's still a gap, and that gap meant that there's like some of the numbers you used are not quite as current as they should be. And according to a DOD press release that talks about recruiting and retention numbers for fiscal year October of last year of 2023 all the way to April of 2024, recruiting it's set to achieve its goal, or 98.92% of its recruiting goals. So it's improving. Obviously, recruiting has improved significantly and is moving in a positive trend, which is amazing. And retention, according to the press release, all services achieved proposed retention goals in the seventh month of the fiscal year, which means that retention is also, you know, moving in the positive trend that the Army is achieving its goals. But anyway, I just wanted to get that out there and make sure that the audience, you and the audience, understands that the Army is kind of going in a positive trend right now with both recruiting and retention. They're making their mission, and they're moving forward and doing great work.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. And I think you pointed out something. You know, my personal experience, you know, being a geographically challenged TPU unit, as I mentioned before we started recording, it's hard for us to keep people long distance driving, so we have to make it an attractive place to come. It's great that the numbers are improving. My personal experience was, you know, at the ESC and then coming back to a company level, and then I dove into the numbers, just pulling data. So it is a little lagging between the peer review process, which was amazing, by the way. Your peer review team at the NCO Journal. I've had peer reviewed projects before at graduate school, but I'm telling you, those guys and gals at the NCO Journal are just top notch and really got me thinking, and just really helpful in the peer review process. So, anyways, yeah, I'm glad the numbers are trending upward. I hope we can keep it that way. That's in the long term goals, 10-year window, 10,000-foot view.
I think it's based on the fact that the focus of your article was not necessarily on recruiting numbers, though, and retention. It was more about the NCO creed and how that can impact whether we're doing well in recruiting and retention. You know, it doesn't really matter if you live by the NCO creed, you're more likely to, I think, to be successful as you're both a recruiter and as somebody who works who wants to retain the good soldiers in their command. So I think that's what the conversation is going to be today. So we're going to talk about, about the you had specific points that you covered on your article. You didn't talk about the entire creed, but there were certain things that you focused on. And then maybe we can kind of dive into something else. But, tell us about that. Tell us about why it is that the NCO creed is so important when it comes to retaining good soldiers and recruiting good soldiers as well.
I think the second and third paragraphs of the NCO creed, I'm not going to recite it for you, but those are the ones that contain the meat and potatoes of just good leadership. And I disaggregated a couple of those things that I had seen from good leaders and why it makes me want to stay as a kind of a non-traditional TPU soldier. I'm a little bit older. Why do I keep wanting to work for my good leadership? And, one of those is, I know my soldiers and I will always place their needs above my own. And I'd seen that in some really good leadership at the division level, a guy named CSM, Freddie Trejo, great command sergeant major, taking the time to really put his needs. I mean, there's a fine line there. A CSM has to put the division or, the command's needs first. But personally, he would just go out of his way, even to the lower enlisted. And I saw things happen and experienced them personally. That right there, I know my soldiers and I always place their needs above my own. And I will communicate consistently with my soldiers and never leave them uninformed. I think those two portions of that second paragraph are just key to being a good leader. If you don't want to throw all the rest out, but those two things are really important to me as a leader and what I've seen from my good leadership.
My favorite thing about your article, or at least what I got out of it, was the fact that it wasn't necessarily the recruiting and retention numbers, you know, because I kind of understand the Army goes up and down with those things. And I think, you know, USAREC is doing a great job right now in the positive trend in those numbers. But when you talk about how the NCO creed is what's necessary to kind of cultivate that environment, right, where you encourage soldiers to retain, I think that that was the message that I got out of it. You know, you do mention that retention is being threatened, and then that poses that question as to, you know, what we're doing wrong. And I think a lot of those answers could be found in the creed.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think I mentioned in there too, you know, throwing money at the problem is will solve part of it. But we have an army that's filled with people who step forward and put their signature on the line and put their hand up and took an oath. Some maybe for a little bit of money and job security, but at some intrinsic level, we're all here to be servants to our nation. And the money, you know, the money might keep them there a little bit, but if you can create an environment where they feel valued and they're treated as well as can be, and sometimes in austere conditions, and, you know, going to AT at Fort Hunter Liggett or MTC, it's miserable for everybody, right? But I mean, we have to train and be ready to fight. But during those evolutions, if you can inculcate in your troops that you know them and that aside from the mission, you'll place their needs above your own, and you're not going to leave them in the dark as much as you can, and you're going to be fair and impartial when recommending rewards and punishment. I mean, those are key things that I talked to the you know, some of these young soldiers that are sticking around, and you hear them say, you know, well, I really like that leader because he takes the time to call during the week and make sure I'm doing okay. You know, and that's selfless service there that I think that's going to keep people in. And then when those people talk to their friends and family, and, you know, they'll be able to relate a good experience. You know, the army is a good place to be. And I can tell you, it's the best decision I ever made. This organization is my only regret. You know, I say I don't live with any regrets. My only regret is I didn't join the reserve 10 years prior. You know, it's just been such a fantastic experience for me. I know that's not the same for everybody, but for me, it's just been a wonderful, wonderful organization to be a part of.
Do you have any stories about, say, in a difficult situation, whether you were deployed to the Middle East or in your job in the Justice Department or anything like that? Do you have a story of anything where that is significant, where you use the creed to actually move forward and do something positive even if it was for just one soldier? Do you have anything you could cite as an example or tell us a story about that?
Well, I mean, we could talk about something that happened last week. I'm part of a suicide prevention liaison for the ESC, even at the company level. So, you know, I took the tier three training and just some really good people and awesome training. And I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn here, but if I don't live the values and if I don't be an example, then who else is, right? I mean, I can't sit here and write an article and talk to you guys about the creed if I'm not living the creed, right? So I got a call last week. We had a soldier in crisis, returned recently from a deployment, and several hundred miles away, and stopped what I was doing, knew that I had to get to this soldier and help him. And I think this goes into placing the soldier's needs above my own. You know, I'm married, I've got four kids, I have a career, I have a very busy career, but that soldier's needs were definitely above my own. So I called my bureau chief and I'm like, hey, listen, boss, I'm gonna be put on orders right now. And then I'm hopping in a car and driving 7 hours to get to the soldier. So, and I did that. And the mission was over within 36 hours. We got that soldier to mental health professionals and got him stabilized. And I spent some time with him. Couldn't be a better feeling when I left and that specialist gave me a hug and said, I can't tell you, First Sergeant, what it means to me that you got in a car and drove 7 hours to me. So, you know, that's one example. And then, you know, I had a tragedy in my family and CSM Trejo, I mentioned him previously. He and I actually did the transition for him when he took over for the SC as a command sergeant major there. So I had a very short window where we interacted. And while that was happening, and shortly thereafter, I had a big family issue, kind of a tragedy. And years had gone by, and I was at a mobile gunnery exercise. And sure enough, I see CSM Trejo come around the bend, and he sees me, and he come over and shake hands, and it's good to see a CSM. And the first thing out of his mouth, "How is your family member?" And by name, mentioned my family member. And that stuck with me, like, this is a leader, you know? And all the things that a division level CSM has going on, I know my soldiers. He knows his soldiers. I was amazed. And I got chills right now just talking about it. That is someone that I want to emulate, and I want to take that servant mindset and inculcate that in my troops so they can become that leader.
I think one thing to keep in mind is that there is no big red easy button to press. You know, sometimes doing the right thing means staying away from that button and doing what needs to be done, no matter how hard it is. You know, as a leader, you have to do what you can to take care of your people.
Well, I think to both of your guys' points, and First Sergeant Leonard, of course, with the Sergeant Major who came and asked you that personal question, who knew about you, I think that shows a lot to that leader. I think people who put more emphasis on basic human decency is generally the leader that I want around, you know, the leader that I want to be. There's some, you know, there's those NCOs out there who are always just, you know, good order and discipline, standards. Can we run the fastest? Can we do the thing the best? But sometimes I think basic human decency and taking care of each other is a little bit more important than the other things. And I think the other things follow right along with it when you exercise those, because people see it and they love you for it.
And they want to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can have those two things. They can be symbiotic, you know, they feed each other. That's, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you bring them along with you rather than drive them in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's important about your article is that, well, that's what you're talking about, is about leading people and not driving them. And I wanted to talk about something here that, for my background here as a Marine, when I was a Lance Corporal, when I got to my first duty station, my Master Sergeant, he was the NCOIC of the shop that I checked into, he gave me this little red card that the Marines, that we call Honor, Courage, and Commitment card. It's red. It's got an eagle, globe, and anchor on it. And it's got, you know, for honor, it says integrity. Under honor, it says integrity, responsibility, and accountability. Under courage, it says do the right thing in the right way for the right reasons. And under commitment, it says devotion to the Corps and to my fellow Marines. The reason I bring it up, I've had this card since I was a Lance Corporal, since I was, I think it was maybe June or July of 1989. The Master Sergeant gave it to me, and I signed it because it says at the back, it says, you know, it has a place for you to sign your name, and it says, at the time, Lance Corporal Chago Zapata is a Marine, and Marines obey the law, lead by example, respect themselves. Anyway, it's got a long list. Similar, I would say, you know, some of the tenets of the NCO creed are part of this. But the reason I bring this up is that, you know, if it's something that you live by, and I kept this in my wallet for 35 years. But if you live by the tenets of the NCO creed, I think that all that's going to do is, first of all, I think it's going to make you a better leader because that's the whole reason for the creed. But if you live them and not just say them, play the part, then it's going to help make you a successful leader.
Absolutely, yeah. That's awesome that you carry that. I mean, that's a lifestyle. That's a mindset, you know, that you've carried with you since 1989, and that you just kind of dated yourself too. So you and I are probably roughly the same age.
You graduated high school, what, 86 or 85?
86.
Yeah. So yeah, we're both dated here.
Guess when Staff Sergeant Cox was born? 1986.
Staff Sergeant Cox, you got all those years ahead of you.
So. That's right. That's right. So getting back just a little bit, I think we got a little bit off. Not really, because we're talking about, you know, talking about good morals, right? Good positive leaders. helping out those soldiers, and then that makes them ultimately want to stay in the Army or retain. I think that that's the main purpose of your article, is talking about, you know, how do we keep soldiers in? So I was wondering, what are some of your couple of your main points? What are some of the things that leaders need to do now to make sure that soldiers, you know, enjoy their work environment, that they stay committed to the Army, and that even if they do leave, they can still, you know, spread the word that, you know, the Army is a good place to be.
So personally, I have a commander, First Lieutenant Groh, great guy. I'm going to be in a different unit by the time he probably hears this. So I'm not buttering him up. But he and I kind of have the same mindset, you know, the little things to keep the troops engaged and happy. So 2 years ago, I came up with something that is really, it's kind of spark an esprit de corps and a challenge and a competition. So we started the First Sergeant's Cup and the Commander's Cup. So the Commander's Cup is for physical fitness. So whatever platoon gets the highest ACFT combined score gets this trophy. And I ordered it online. It looked smaller than it turned out to be, but it's just a giant trophy. It's like 2 feet tall, but it, you know, it says, Commander's Cup and, you know, which platoon and the platoon sergeant. So there's a motivation to get your name and your platoon on that trophy. And then the First Sergeant's Cup is for individual weapons qual per platoon as well. And so that, we kind of came up with the idea as just kind of like a one-off. Hey, this would kind of be neat to spark some competition. But I tell you what, when you hand that trophy over, in fact, I'll be next battle assembly, we'll be handing them out. Just to see the smiles on their faces, that not only are they getting recognized, but they beat the other platoons, and it motivates the other guys to do better, guys and gals, at the next IWQ or ACFT. Those little things, you know. And if you looked at that, and there was that academic stuff I threw in that paper, which is kind of my background, you know, achievement recognition, personal growth, all of those things. When they know that your leaders are paying attention, and anybody can yell, you know, our metrics aren't good. You know, we only got, you know, 65% IWQ, all that negativity. But if you can take that and flip it, and hey, we know you guys are working hard. You're away from your families. You're out here in the hot sun all day long, zeroing and doing the pop-up range, or, you know, doing the ACFT. And we appreciate you. And here's a trophy. And then there's some other stuff that's entitled that comes with that. Like they get to leave early, or they, you know, they don't have to. Somebody else has to clean their weapons or something. You know, it depends on what's going on. But I wrote something in there about sticks and carrots, right? Those little carrots, just to keep them motivated and happy. You know, hey, the commander and the first sergeant are paying attention, and they like us. They like what we're doing. And there is something, when I walk into the drill hall, I can see a trophy with my squad, my platoon's name on it. You know, it works for us.
I think it's important to remember, though, when it comes to your article, is that like every soldier, every unit is a small mic. It's a microcosm of the Army, right? So
yeah,
you can't expect whatever you do as a servant leader, as somebody who keeps their soldiers informed. You can't worry necessarily about the whole Army. All you can worry about is what your sphere of influence is. But if as a leader you influence enough of, or you influence your soldiers to the point that they want to stay in the Army, they want to, you're going to help them succeed because of the example that you set. I think ultimately that's what your article is about you as a leader being a good servant leader, someone who cares about their soldiers, keeps them informed. Rewards good work and punishes poor work and does it fairly, that you're going to be able to influence those people who are going to go off and be leaders of their own and going to influence their own little microcosm of whatever unit command they go to. And then they go off and do the same thing to the next scoop and then the next junior soldier. So
right.
What you do as a soldier, as a leader matters, and it'll matter to that small group of people who are going to go off and do great things on their own.
And you brought something else up, Chaga, that I thought was interesting: the punishment, rewards and punishment, and I briefly touched on that. I didn't want to go too deep into the whole punishment thing, but I'm telling you, that's probably one of the most difficult things as a first sergeant and dealing with platoon sergeants and squad leaders and them having to mete out some sort of punishment or counselings and what like and people just don't want to do that. And I think that's almost more detrimental to the morale of a unit than all the other good stuff that you're doing. If you allow those poor performing or disrespectful soldiers to go unchecked, and that's a difficult part of the job as well, is appropriate negative. And I've had to explain that to that, come on, I don't really want to. I have to go to a counseling. Yeah, you have to, because the good soldiers, seeing the poor performers go unchecked, that breeds contempt, and it just decimates morale. So I think that's important. I'm glad you brought that up. So anyways, just want to make a comment on that.
No, absolutely. Fair is fair. Is fair. And again, there's no easy button. If you press the easy button, it's easy to just kind of follow the status quo and just let it ride, man. Just no big deal. Just deal with it later. But all the other soldiers are going to see that, and either they're going to say, well, he can do it. He can get away with that stuff, and so can I. Just reiterating what you said, I guess, First Sergeant, it's one of those things that, fair reward and punishment was one, doing the right thing, keeping your people informed. I think that those are the things that really stuck in my brain housing group that I connected with.
Well, I appreciate that. I try to live those things, and it's interesting. I have a son who's actually at airborne school right now at Fort Moore. Like this, he'll jump on Monday, I think, if the weather's good. But he's an SMP cadet, so he's 88 Mike in the Utah Guard, and that doing the right thing, as he's kind of growing as a young cadet and a SMP, said, son, the leadership is hard, but if you just, you're going to be challenged on so many levels throughout your career. But if you just adhere to integrity and do the right thing every single time, you can never go wrong. And everything else will fall into place. Just having that integrity, which is, I will not compromise my integrity nor my moral courage. That's in the NCO creed. So, yeah.
I think it's important, though, to acknowledge here the fact, though, that we're all human beings.
Absolutely.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Nobody's
going to be. Yeah, absolutely. Infallible. We'll all make mistakes. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, but doing the right thing and doing all the things that you talked about in your article, I can sit here and tell stories about how I did this and that I really did really great. But I'm not telling you guys the stories where I failed, where I didn't do the right thing or where I kind of missed the mark. But they're out there, and you can't let those things define you.
That you brought up a great that's another great point. I mean, I could sit here and talk about this stuff with you guys forever. The important thing, I think, when you make that mistake, is to own it. I make mistakes all the time, even in my current role as a first sergeant. And I have a full time staff meeting every morning or every Monday morning. I'll stop in at the unit and meet my full-time staff. And, I make mistakes. The learning curve to become a first sergeant is, it's super steep. And being able to say, hey, that was wrong. I messed up. Walk me through what I should have done. That sort of mentality. Hey, own the right things, but 100% own your mistakes as well. And that's part of the integrity thing,
I think that's one of the biggest key things about it is, owning your mistakes, learning from them, try not to do them again,
Don't let them define you.
Yeah. And to kind of just wrap this up to the beginning, I mean, we're talking about the NCO creed. First Sergeant, what do you think is like the number one thing that a junior NCO should take out of the creed and then try and run with to shape their leadership style?
Yeah, I think those three things that I busted out, disaggregated, probably would sum it up. Knowing your soldiers, communicating, and having that integrity and moral courage. And sometimes that moral courage is even more difficult than physical courage. But yeah, knowing your soldiers, that's a big one. I think those other things kind of fall in line. You know, if you know your soldiers, you're already communicating with them. And a person who, you know, it's just kind of goes hand in hand. If you have a leader who's taking the time to know their soldiers and communicating, they're probably a person who's got pretty good integrity and moral courage. You know, they're tactically and technically and tactically proficient. All of those things, you know, those are things every NCO needs to be doing. But you know, that getting to know your troops and having integrity. So
remember to put your knowledge to the page, submit articles, and get published with the NCO Journal. Don't forget to check our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll catch you next time on the NCO Journal podcast.